Generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystal Lynn.
All righty. Good morning, Coastsiders. It's Friday, May 29th, 2026. Time for some Coastal Windage. The talk of the coast. The Coastside's very own live call-in talk show. Good morning, Crystal Lynn.
Good morning.
Not feeling so great today, so sadly, this is tea I'm drinking instead of coffee. And you can tell, like, the energy level is just not the same.
No.
And partially because I'm not feeling well, but partially because I'm just sad because I'm drinking tea. Oh, tea's great. We're going to hear like a bazillion emails about how wonderful tea is. Yeah, I get it. I don't like it. I've tried it many times. I will drink it when I'm sick. But coffee is the real deal. I'm sorry.
Agree. I am not a tea person either.
Yeah. Okay. So, and that's our show for today. No.
done.
Wrap. Okay. Just an update on, so back in the new home, we're trying to decide between the Orb or the Panopticon as the nickname for the new place. I know Crystalyn loves
you
both of them.
You keep saying we. This is not a we thing. This is a you thing.
Well, it's the branding department. I have nothing to do with it. Like, as with most things of this show, we have nothing to do with it. It's run by the suits. Here's the weird thing. This is the only reason I bring it up today. So the Orb was crushing. Like, it was over ahead by like 350 votes last week. Some kind of shenanigans are going on because the Panopticon is up to 252 votes.
Wow.
Orb only got like 7 votes this week. So it's at 427, Panopticon at 252. And so we had the interns looking into it. Here's why. The poly markets and the online betting sites have picked up on the situation.
Sure.
And right now, the Orb is currently sitting at plus 450 for wagerers. So that's why.
Okay.
That's why. All right. Disclaimer. Beep, 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 beep. Coastal Windage does not condone prop betting and has no involvement with these companies. In fact, I think prop betting is, like social media, one of the scourges on the earth right now. Okay. So,
Do you want to explain what prop betting is? Because probably a lot of people don't know. And I only recently found out, and I have a brother who is a professional poker player, and I just... and learning about these things.
So prop betting is, let's say in the old days you would bet on a game. I'll take the Packers and the point spread against the Bears. Prop betting is you could bet on every single little thing that might happen. What's the first play of the game going to be? A running play or a passing play? How many catches is this player going to get? How many running plays in the first half? Every little tiny minor detail of anything. And the poly markets have gotten into politics, who's going to win these events, and things like, are we going to bomb Tehran tomorrow or not? These kinds of things. So the poly markets are really kind of sick.
And people can win money.
Yeah, that's why they do it.
Oh.
It's a betting thing. You bet money. Sorry, I'm getting comfortable here. I brought my recliner into. I'm not feeling good. Did I mention I brought my recliner in? Give me a break. Thank you. Yes, exactly.
It is a clown show over here.
Yeah.
When I was learning about it, and obviously it was like on TV and they were, you know, serializing it, but they did in the TV show bring up a good point that, like, if people can just set up these bets about anything, then they can, in theory, try to change the outcome to their benefit. So it's like these people were betting on like random things that were going to happen in their city. And, like, are 10 cars going to get broken into? And then they go grab their baseball bats and break into 10 cars and win $1 million.
Exactly.
Which I'm sure is like super extreme, but it just does show that it's like if people can bet on things where they can control the outcome, you are just asking for pandemonium.
Yeah, and now that the professional sports leagues have gotten in bed with the betting, online betting sites and stuff, and offering these prop bets, there's been many, many professional athletes have gotten in trouble because, let's say, the prop bet is this guy's only going to take five shots in the first half, or he's going to score less than 5 points in the first half, and oh, suddenly his hamstring is not feeling so good in the first half, but here he comes out in the second half feeling great. That kind of stuff.
I think that stuff's kind of been around forever, right? Haven't baseball players and
in the 20s
gotten in trouble for that kind of thing?
Well, that's the Black Sox scandal of 1919 World Series. That's a whole different thing. But there's been a few things over the years. But because there was this hard firewall between and this really, you know, negative stigma between between betting and professional sports, that's why you didn't have a professional team in Vegas for years and years. But again, the professional sports have sold their soul to the devil, and so prop betting is another level of being able to influence the game and have players get directly involved. If you're going to throw a game or something, if you're the main player or it's a situation where the one play can affect it, you could do it. But on prop betting, it's all individual stuff. You have complete control over that, and that's where it's gone downhill.
And that was Coastal Windage. Today you learned about prop betting.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we do here. We educate, we entertain. This is unusual. We're going to kind of start with an email because it's somewhat relevant, and I think you would appreciate this email because you've been trying to get me to do this more. I preface this email by mentioning that our number to call into this call-in talk radio show is 650-560-9851. That should already be in your speed dial or your Rolodex or something that's easily accessible. So now we're going to go to, if I can find it here, in this pile of papers. Why did you hand me this huge pile? So the interns, like, come on, this is a huge pile of papers.
Okay. Organization people.
Yeah, come on. Okay, next season, when we come back, it's going to be index cards. We're going to index cards. There's papers, there's just too much. Okay, this is an email from listener Ma Give 'em Bell. Ma Give 'em Bell. Subject line, do you even know it? Hey, guys, here's an idea for your... air for quotes here, your call-in radio program. Why don't you give people the number so we can call in? Yeah, exactly. I knew you would like that. I had a slew of questions for Joaquin and was waiting on lifted wings to get my chance to talk to him, but you never gave out the number. How long have you been doing this show? Okay, I will fully admit that that I don't mention the phone number enough. However, Ma Give 'em Bell, I would throw that question back to you. Yes, how long has this show been on? 9 years, 366 episodes.
We did change the phone number 17 times in the last 4 months.
Okay, but for 95% of that 9 years, it was the same number that it is now once again. And, Ma, if you just type Coastal Windage into any search browser, the first hit that comes back is the Coastal Windage webpage on khmbradio.com, and boom, there's the number above the fold right on the page. So I just like people. Claude is not going to wipe your little mouth for you, wipe your little bottom for you after you go to the bathroom. ChatGPT is not there to do everything. Maybe take it upon yourself.
Maybe Ma doesn't have the internet and Ma only has a landline. Landline and radio. That's how Ma lives.
Well, then I want to meet Ma because...
That should be your soulmate.
I know.
Soulmate.
She is. Exactly. Okay.
I hear you, Ma.
And I don't disagree, except with the like.
I don't disagree, but disagree.
I don't disagree, except look it up.
As somebody who runs the visitor center, looking it up does not work for a very, 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 very many people.
Yeah, well, that is an indictment of our society right there. As we go into the AI age where it's just going to get worse.
But then you sit here and bemoan technology all the time.
Yep.
But when it's convenient for you, you want people to use technology.
No, see,
they just want to talk to you.
This is the battle I have with Frank. I'm not against technology. I'm against frivolous technology that is only there to make tech bros bazillionaires. That's the technology that I hate. Or technology that is promoted.
So what's Google?
Google used to be a decent
technology to make a tech bro $1 billion.
When it started out, those tech bros were not billionaires. And Google, when
Every tech started in a basement. Every tech started in a garage.
That's not true. No, that is the HP myth. No tech company has started in a garage since the dot-com era. Give me a break. These guys are starting out with $5 billion in funding from VCs right off the bat.
No, they're not. Not all of them.
Okay.
There are some very hardworking people out there.
Yeah, the 996 people that expect you to do that for them so they can be bazillionaires. Okay, here's our topics for today. It's time to vote. Monarch butterfly overwintering site in El Granada, and I doubt we'll get to it, which is fine because next week we're going to have somebody from the MCC on this topic that we may not get to today about those mid-coast building permits, which we didn't get to last week. So next week is the last chance for that topic because you only get 3 weeks. And if we don't get to it in 3 weeks, you're out. We are hoping to have Half Moon Bay City Councilperson Paul Nagengast on the show today, but unfortunately he was not able to make it this morning. And stuff happens, we understand. But he probably got a cold from getting dunked in the dunk tank
at Monday.
The Holy Ghost Festival, a.k.a. the Charmarita this weekend.
Yeah, hope you feel better, Paul.
I saw a video of Cameron getting dunked, but I was disappointed because the dunk tank is not deep enough. It needs to be a full submersion. Cameron got dunked, but he landed on his feet, and so it was only, like, dunked to his waist. This needs to be full, head in the water, come up, spitting out water, like treading water. That's a real dunk tank.
Or at least cross your legs so that you're smaller.
The dunk tank is not big enough. Okay. Per Paul, though, at least Paul responds to email and communicates with us, unlike Tom Steyer. And Tom Steyer's name will be brought up many times this episode because I'm pretty salty about it. Okay. Air quality report. Once again, for like the last month, the air quality out here on the coast has not been its usual amazing. Yeah, it's been still in the incredible range, but at the high end of that. And I'm not sure why that is. 31 today. Now, remember, 0 to 50 is incredible. 50 to 1 to 100
is very muggy, I will say.
But for the last month, though.
Our weather is just weird.
Of course, we only do the air quality report on Friday, so maybe every Friday it just gets bad, and the rest of the days it's fine. We don't know, because we don't do the air quality report those days. And nobody else does, either. Yes, so the Frank is... Frank has written up a huge placard in magic marker that says the phone number for this show is 650-560-9851. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate that. I think we... No?
Frank is proving that technology can find the phone number.
Which he said he got from ChatGPT. Okay. Well, that just makes me more sad than the tea, I think. All right.
Incredible timing, Frank. Five minutes after the conversation.
I know, right? Well, that's how long ChatGPT takes to figure it out. That's on ChatGPT, not on Frank. All right, 31 today in El Granada, 40 in Half Moon Bay. This is what I'm talking about. Like, we're usually in the teens. And then we contrast that with Over the Hill in Redwood City, 11. Santa Cruz, 13. And today in Pismo Beach, California, 5. Yeah.
I wonder if there's something off our coast that's coming in that's just not so hot, and then by the time it reaches the inland, it's...
Well, it's... Okay.
I'm like, I don't know. Part of me feels like that's a ship, and part of me feels like that's aliens. Could go either way.
Right? I mean, we've kind of theorized, just, spitballing. There's all this road construction work being done.
Oh, maybe this is part of the... I was reading up on the... Super El Nino. Somebody said, please explain it like I'm five. And it was a great explanation that basically said, off of our coast, there is a imaginary fan. And that imaginary fan blows a lot of what's, you know, coming over the ocean away from us. And that in an El Nino year, that fan slows down heavily, letting more onto our coast. And then in a super El Nino, which apparently we're headed into, that fan almost completely stops. So that also could be playing a part.
Well, interesting. We'll be doing the air quality report going, you know, into the, when we pick up again in the fall after our summer break. So it'll be interesting to see if the numbers are pushed up into the, you know, decent range, out of the incredible range into the decent range. All right. Follow up on the Highway 1 congestion and Caltrans. We mentioned last week the delays on the Midcoast, and we speculated that it was due to a change to timing in the lights, because I had the intern sitting out there documenting it at both Frenchman's Creek and Coronado. And guess what? Turns out our theory was correct. Per a press release from the city of Half Moon Bay, but noticeably and notably not from Caltrans, yes, several intersections, including Coronado Street and Russo-Frances Avenue, remain on temporary preset signal timing during active construction phases. Additional intersections may periodically operate under similar work conditions as work progresses. This is you, City of So the people in Half Moon Bay haven't really had to deal with this very much, unless for some reason they go to the harbor or Pacifica. But in all the meetings I've been to over the years, it's quite clear people that live in the city of Half Moon Bay don't really know or visit the Midcoast very often, or really care what happens up there. So this traffic that's been happening in the Midcoast has really been a non-issue for the people of Half Moon Bay. Hate to tell you, people of Half Moon Bay, but per this release, additional intersections may periodically operate under similar conditions as work progresses, including North Main Street, Highway 92, Kelly Avenue, and Poplar. Supervisor Mueller weighed in on the fray and insisted Caltrans fix the timing issue with the lights immediately. But Caltrans' response is, we can't do it until the entire project's done. And that might not be until August. Ouch.
But they did go and change the timing on the Frenchman's Creek light.
Did they?
Yeah, they went out.
Because traffic sucked this morning, as it did last week. So,
yeah, but not for me, though. I don't know what the difference is, or maybe it's because school is, you know, on its last week or whatever. But, no, but coming in at, I come in about 15, 20 minutes after you, and it was very normal for me at 8:20.
Couldn't get out of El Granado. Cars stacked in the Coronado intersection.
Well, no, I don't think the Coronado light was changed. The Frenchman's Creek light is what I was told was changed.
So they changed the light inside the Half Moon Bay city limits, but left the Midcoast to just flail. Okay.
Possibly.
I see what's going on here.
All I know is what I heard from the county was the Frenchman's Creek light is got edited for sure.
Well, that wasn't my experience today. And frankly, Caltrans not high on my list of people, of organizations that are
thoughtful,
yes, and communicative, and somewhat even trustworthy.
Welcome, okay. Welcome to my camp, and we will soon be getting a flag. Because I just can't. I just want to organize and just. They're just so terrible.
Yes, agreed.
We're going to get a clubhouse. It's
going to
be great.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're moving on. Sorry about that. Ode to the Dirt Road. Really, this should have been retitled Elegy to the Dirt Road. Recently, I noticed that the 800 block of San Carlos Avenue in El Granada was paved. It used to be a dirt road. It was one of the last public dirt roads in El Granada, or the entire Midcoast, or really the entire coastside for that matter. This 800 block of San Carlos Avenue was just a 100-yard dead-end road, but still, it made me sad to see it paved. There's really no it was hard DG. There was no reason to pave it. There's about 100 feet of Balboa between Almira and Montecito Avenue in El Granada that still hasn't been yet paved. Balboa has been paved, including a new section recently, again within the last couple of months or this year. but there's still about 100 feet that isn't paved. And that 200 block of San Juan Avenue over off of Columbus in El Granado is not yet paved. Other than that, Coastsiders, give me a call, please. I want to know. A public with a street sign, you know, this is... Where is there a public dirt road left on the coastside? And with development going on, there's not going to be many vacant lots left either. Side note, used to be that in my yard, I do my yard, if I caught or incapacitated a gopher, I'd put it in a bucket and walk it down to the nearest vacant lot and turn it loose. You're on your own, dude. I'm just not in my yard, vacant lot. Guess what? Can't do that anymore because there are no vacant lots near my house. I have to walk all the way down to the Burnham Strip now, which I did the other day, but it's just a sad commentary. There used to be several vacant lots on my block and the next block over. Not anymore. In fact, the closest vacant lot I can think of is the 6-acre, what I'm calling the Xerces parcel, or the CUSD parcel, bordered by Sonora, Sevilla, and Coral Reef Avenue in El Granada, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But back to dirt roads. I love dirt roads. I grew up on a dirt road in a community with dozens of them. To me, dirt roads signify a simpler, slower pace and a more satisfying way of life to me. And I see them as endangered survivors of a different world than the one we live in today. They're relics of a time gone by.
I do love a dirt road. They're just, I don't know. Yeah, they're like very nostalgic and it's just such a vibe.
Exactly, it's a vibe. That's good. Dirt roads. Wow, Frank. I'm on tea today, and so I'm on low energy. Frank must have got my coffee order because he is just going nuts over here in the engineering booth. My goodness. Dirt roads are also the victim of the relentless human push to sanitize the world in the name of progress and modernity. And I point to San Carlos in the road that recently got paved. Why? Why? Why would you need to pave that? There's no reason to pave that. But you got to do it because progress. We got to pave. Anyways.
But meanwhile, there's other roads that are so rutted out that they might as well be dirt roads.
Thank you. San Carlos unpaved was a better road than Obispo is right now. Absolutely. So give me a dirt road any day. In fact, give me a dirt road, a long uphill climb, and a human-powered bike. And that's going to leave most of humanity behind right there. Okay, you could decide for yourself whether leaving humanity behind is a good thing or not. But that's kind of like, that's a great afternoon. A dirt road, a long climb, and a human-powered bike.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. We've only got a couple minutes to the break, so let me just... Statements on candidates who appear on the show. Because I've gotten a lot of emails saying, it's unfair that you have these candidates on. And the numbers show that we had a lot of people listening to the Joaquin Jimenez and the Ray Mueller episodes that were just this past month, which is good for the show, but it's really best for the Coastside electorate and the two candidates who got a chance to have a more candid discussion about things that they maybe would not have in a more formal setting or a candidate forum. That's what we try to do here. We try to have a conversation, a free-flowing conversation, and in this situation, let the candidates, you know, talk about what they want to talk about. Which I think is critical for the voters to try to make their decision. But I want to let people know, please know, Coastal Windage, nor myself, nor I think you as well, Crystal, we do not endorse or try to influence our listeners to show favoritism to any specific candidate. That's not the purpose of having these people on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we have a candidate on the show, we also invite their opponent or opponents. Sometimes those opponents choose not to come on.
But that's of their own accord.
They've been invited.
Yeah.
Because part of the mission of the show is to provide a platform for the Coastside community to receive and share information, perspectives, and whatnot. We've had many political candidates and office holders on this show from local special districts like the MCC, GWSD, Half Moon Bay City Council, County Supervisor, all the way up to U.S. Congress. And back to Tom Steyer, we have tried to get this Pescadero landholder and California gubernatorial candidate to appear on the show, but apparently, and I'm just, Maybe I'm trying to bait him into, like, contacting me, but apparently the coast site is too insignificant for this billionaire to even graciously decline the invitation. And I think that is important for coast siders to know, because let's just contrast that with Sam Liccardo, U.S. congressperson from San Jose, not from here, doesn't own land here. I met Sam Liccardo because he knocked on my door, and I don't live like right off the highway. I'm in El Granada. He knocked on my door, and then he has been on the show many times before and after he was elected. When I was hurt with my injury at like 10 o'clock at night one time, he texted me, "How are you doing? You okay?" Mm-hmm. No, I have not donated one penny to his campaign or campaigned for him in any way. But it shows a person's character. Meanwhile, I see Tom Steyer at fancy, froofy events where he's getting, you know, being able to be a celebrity and people are fawning all over him and he gets to hold court at these big, splashy, ritzy, glitzy events. But he's too big and important, and the coast site is not important enough for him to come here where he owns a huge amount of property and talk directly to coastsiders. We're not important enough. Well, I will remember that on June 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
You could be assured of that. Speaking of which, when we come, what do we got, Frank? 1 minute? Okay.
And I will note that there has been at least one other candidate that has come and talked on the coast side.
Gubernatorial?
Uh-huh.
Who is that?
I want to say Porter. The
really?
Lady.
Katie
yeah.
Porter?
Yeah, she was here for an event that I got to see.
Oh.
And so, you know, it just, so it's not, we are not out of the realm of being a place where they would want to come and speak.
And people might say, well, Ruben, other than Katie Porter, no other gubernatorial candidates have come. No other gubernatorial candidates own a huge amount of land on the coast side.
Yeah, so, and I don't think Katie Porter does either.
Right. So that's why I'm saying to Tom Steyer, hey, come and talk to your neighbors. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, it's time to vote. Okay, we'll be right back after these commercial breaks.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side.
100.9 KHMB. Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
This is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me along with Stan Warren Luttrell after Coastal Windage. We'll get a look at today in history and a brand new forgotten find. Coming up at 10 a.m. from 100.9 FM KHMB.
Okay, and we're back. All right, speaking of which, it's time to vote. I'm talking about June 2nd. That's, this coming Tuesday?
Yeah.
Primaries and some general elections. Like, it's primaries for, like, governor to whittle it down to two, but also some general elections as for supervisor. I believe, right, whoever gets the most votes for supervisor on June 2nd will be the supervisor. There's no general election for supervisor because there's only two candidates running for district.
Yeah, so I think if I understand it correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong at 650-560-9851. Had there been multiple candidates like we've had in the past, like I think last go-round there might have been four or five candidates, then yes, the primary on the second would be to narrow it down to the top two. And even if there was four or five, if any one of them got 51% of the vote, then they just knock everybody else out. I believe that with this one, it's still similar. I think that if they come in close to each other, there's a potential that it does still go to November. But if either one of them runs away with it, then it ends.
Okay.
That's my understanding. Again, 650-560-9851 to correct me.
Nice. Have you voted yet?
Yes.
Okay, so you're a mail-in voter.
Yes.
Okay. Which... okay, I mean, personally, as listeners know, I always vote in person day of. I'm not against mail-in voting. I'm not saying like we take it away. I'm just saying I personally don't like it. Again, not because it's corrupt or fraudulent or favors one party or candidate or the other. It's because from my old school perspective, voting is part of our duty as citizens, and coming together in local voting precincts on the election day to vote and talk with our friends and neighbors is part of the social compact. And so mail-in voting, to me, lessens the commitment and responsibility of going someplace, setting aside some time, and going and voting on election day. Side note, personally, I'm getting tired of well-constructed, well-thought-out rules, laws, norms, and standards in this country that are being changed and rewritten for convenience and opportunity. Though I said I'm not against mail-in voting, I feel like that's what mail-in voting is. Is it's for convenience and opportunity. And when I say I'm getting tired of stuff being rewritten for convenience and opportunity, I point to the county's current efforts to amend the LCP to accommodate more building permits than is currently allowed. But maybe we'll get to that in this show or the next. Anyways, getting back to voting. We managed day of voting for years and years and decades and hundreds of years. Day of voting. Why now do we...
Isn't historically voter turnout pretty poor?
Okay, exactly. I understand that argument. Mail-in voting...
Like, I feel like it was not... I mean, within my adult lifetime that they even put through the rule that businesses had to let their people off for a certain amount of time on election day so that they could go vote, because there was like businesses not letting people go vote.
I understand the argument that increases voter turnout, but again, like if voter turnout was going down, it wasn't because something had changed. It was always you had to go and vote at the precinct. It was people that had changed. And so now we've changed the rules to accommodate people instead of making people make a commitment.
No, because it's to help the people who've been disenfranchised. Like, there's entire communities of people where going to the voting booth is very awkward and uncomfortable, and they've been dissuaded to go, and that their vote doesn't matter, and all of these things. And if they can do it from the comfort of their home and pop it in the mail, why would we not do that? Sometimes you just have to be willing to meet people where they are.
I think
we're not going to online voting. That's when it gets real hairy.
I think there's too much meeting people where they are and not enough people going and meeting something else where it is.
I will agree to that on a lot of topics. On a lot of topics, but not this one.
Okay. Well, ultimately, again, I accept mail-in voting. It's like a landline or paper tickets. You can have both modalities.
Yes.
So I'm fine with that. Just don't take but here's the thing. Don't take away my option to vote on voting day, like these places that won't take cash now. Fine. You want to do all kinds of fancy electronic stuff with your phone and everything? Great. But don't make that the only way I can buy something. Let me pay cash. Let me go to the ball game with some cash in my pocket and buy a hot dog, or even get into the game, as opposed to, like, if I don't have a smartphone, I ain't getting in the game. Talk about disenfranchised. So if you can't buy a $1,000 iPhone, you can't go to a ball game these days. Fine, I'm not going to a ball game then. So people say, well, that will never happen. They'll never take away your option to vote on election day.
Oh, heck yeah, they'll try.
Yeah, there used to be many, many voting stations all up and down the coast state on voting day. Now, on the entire coast side, there's one place in Half Moon Bay and one place at the airport. I have a photograph. We'll get to that in a second. So that, to me, is an example of the powers that be driving consumers into a box canyon of choices. You limit the choices, and then you say, well, you know, people didn't want to do that other thing. Yeah, because it wasn't available. So people don't want to vote day of. Yeah, because now it's super hard to find where to go to vote, whereas it used to be I used to be able to walk from my house to the polling station in my neighborhood and vote. Now I got to get in a car and battle traffic to either go to Half Moon Bay or the airport. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the powers of B putting people in a, you know, limiting choices and then saying, well, this is what people want. Yeah, because they only have two choices or however many choices. This and per mail-in voting, this year's governor's race in California is a great example of why I prefer day of voting. Early voters who voted for a certain gubernatorial candidate or two, or one or two of those candidates, have lost their vote. If they voted a month ago,
yeah,
and they voted for somebody who's no longer in the race come election day, their vote doesn't count. They've lost their vote. Do they get it back? No.
I will say, yeah, my mail-in vote goes in at the last possible second. I don't vote as soon as I get my thing in the mail.
Yeah, that's smart, because you... 6 weeks out when the mail-in voting starts.
Well, a lot of them haven't done the forums. A lot of them haven't done interviews. Like
stuff hasn't come out yet.
Yeah. I do hold off until the last possible second.
Okay, so I'm excited about this June 2nd voting day because this is my son's first time voting. Yes, he's only 18. He's not 37, and he's just never voted before. No, he's 18. This is his first opportunity to vote. I'm encouraging to vote day of, but it's up to him. He's a teenager, so I imagine that the voting packet has been sitting there unopened for a week. I imagine that he will vote day of just because he will put it off till the last second. The photograph I was mentioning, I showed him a picture of me holding him in my arms when he was 11 months old as I voted for president in 2008 at the voting station at El Granada Elementary.
Huh.
Yes. So that was a wonderful moment for me to, again, to take my baby to vote. As like, this is, of course he has no memory of it, but, you know, we're renewing the tradition. This is, son, as a citizen, this is what you do. By the way, in my personal opinion, that night was one of the greatest night, election night 2008, was one of the greatest nights in American history. And I thought to myself, I literally remember thinking to myself, okay, this country has finally arrived as a mature nation of stature for all time. And now, looking at how the country is run from the top down, I guess I could not have been more wrong. So that hurts. Okay, let's move on to a different topic. I was going to say a happier topic. I don't know.
I don't know if you have happier topics.
I always have. This is nothing but puppy dogs and ice cream on this show.
Oh, great.
Puppy dogs eating ice cream.
And then, not so great.
And then having diarrhea all over your house. That's more of our show.
That would be a pooperific show.
Yes. Monarch butterfly overwintering site in El Granada. Okay, so we mentioned earlier there's a large 6-acre parcel of vacant land in North El Granada between Clipper Ridge neighborhood and El Granada, bounded by Sevilla, Sonora, and Coral Reef Avenue. It's owned by CUSD, Cabrillo Unified School District. And while some, well, people in Half Moon Bay don't even know about it, but while some on the Midcoast may not even notice or may take it for granted, I personally maintain that this open space is as vital to the character and vibe of El Granada as Quarry Park or the Burnham Strip. There's trails, there's open space, there's wildlife, adventure, no lights, buildings, or cars. Mm-hmm. It's just an open space where you can go and listen, see wildlife, and just decompress a little bit.
Let your gophers go.
And let my gophers go. I haven't let one go there because it's a few blocks away. The Burnham Strip is closer, but, you know, I mean, if a parking lot gets built on the Burnham Strip, I may have to go. Well, if a parking lot got built, I would definitely go and put the gopher there. Anyways, Melinda McNaughton, a frequent guest on the show and a member of the local group El Granada Advocates, as well as associated with the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation, has helped bring to the community's attention that this parcel is also a critical overwintering site for the imperiled and iconic monarch butterfly. If you get a chance, listeners, please go to khmbradio.com and listen to our February 13th, 2026 episode in which we interview Melinda about the monarch population in this parcel. That episode has some alarming data and other information about just how imperiled this butterfly species is.
And does that parcel have any type of restrictions on it now because of that? Or is anybody working? Is Melinda working towards that?
We're good. We've got some. We'll get to that. We've got information on that. But some background. Essentially, Western monarch butterfly populations once numbered in the millions on the California coast, and they have declined to a small fraction of their historic levels. I think
it was like 8,000
for an insect population is almost non-existent. California's coast plays an irreplaceable role in the annual cycle of the Western monarch butterfly. They go back and forth between like central Mexico and the California coast.
Yeah, because another big spot that they land is Pacific Grove. So like Pacific Grove has long had a butterfly sanctuary in this grove of trees that they had discovered was where they would go.
Yeah, so each winter the monarchs gather in sheltered groves near the coast. Where the trees and surrounding landscape create the specific conditions they need to survive the colder months. Natural Bridges State Beach in Santa Cruz County, Lighthouse Field State Beach, Santa Cruz County, Pismo Beach State Park.
There it is.
In San Luis Obispo County, the Nature Conservancy site in Elwood, Santa Barbara County, and the one you just mentioned as well. Those are, you know, dedicated overwintering sites. And the Xerxes Foundation has identified this El Granado parcel as an important overwintering site. So these habitats are critical, yet habitat loss remains a major threat. More than 60 overwintering sites have already been lost, and more are damaged or degraded every year. And now on this list is this parcel in El Granado, which has been deemed a monarch overwintering site, but is in the process of being rezoned for multi-unit affordable housing. Fortunately, Xerxes Society, El Granada advocates, and other caring folks have been active to protect the site from unnecessary and irreversible destruction. The Xerxes Society is an official sponsor of California AB 2254, a bill to strengthen protections for coastal monarch butterfly overwintering habitat in California. By integrating habitat protection into existing coastal planning processes, the bill provides local governments with the tools and guidance to help safeguard these important sites while maintaining flexibility in local implementation. 2254 would develop model POTUS. I'm sorry, folks. I got a lot of... I'm feeling very... Okay. Warning.
Phlegmy.
It's about to get gross.
Phlegmy.
Yeah, I'm feeling very phlegmy. And the phlegm is like...
Yeah, we don't need the description.
You sound like my wife. Like, I don't want to hear... No. Okay, it's causing me some lingual problems. Let's just put it that way. Okay. And I apologize for that, but side note... My wife's like, you don't need to go in. Crystalline's there. She's got it. I'm like, I have never called in 366 episodes. I may not have been here, but never once have I called in sick to the show or just decided, I need a day off.
Yeah, you're a trooper.
This is the show. This is what we do. So, but I will admit,
But if I call in sick next Friday, you guys know what happened.
And I would feel really, really bad.
No.
So AB 2254 would develop model policies to protect monarch overwintering habitat, incorporate these policies into local coastal programs, LCPs, provide guidance to local governments while maintaining flexibility, and require local governments with monarch butterfly overwintering habitat sites located within their jurisdictions in the coastal zone to develop and implement enforceable monarch butterfly overwintering habitat site protection policies based on guidance developed by the state. I mean, sounds good to me. What's the problem here?
That same state has mandates for housing?
Right, so...
It's just some conflicting ordinances and laws.
Like I said, this parcel is currently being rezoned for the express purpose of building multi-unit domiciles. So, here's some updates on the progress of AB 2254. This is not really... pertinent to AB 2554, but updates on the parcel and local government. the Board of County, San Mateo County Board of Supervisors, discussed this site, it's kind of, at its meeting in April. The planning department presented the Bayside Housing Rezoning Element, which is a little bit of a misnomer. The Bayside Housing Rezoning Element, which includes Colma, Broadmoor, the Harbor Industrial Area in Redwood City, and for some reason, El Granada. Right there, the whole thing is just out the window to me of, like, doesn't make any sense and smacks of shoving stuff down the Midcoast throat. Mm-hmm. That's Bayside stuff, where all the transportation corridors, where all the services are, and then shoehorned in is, oh, El Granada. Which, this is a Sesame Street thing. Which of these things is not like the other?
Yeah.
Right? El Granada. Okay, so the Board of Supervisors was presented with this housing element, and they were discussing where they can, you know, build more housing. Per Melinda, there was minimal discussion of El Granada, yet the planning department noted that the proposal did not yet include the El Granada parcels, but that it was going to, and this was still ongoing. Supervisors voted yes on this housing element, except for Supervisor Mueller. But that was kind of unclear. Okay, so El Granada is mentioned, but the details aren't there, but the supervisors voted yes. So what does this mean for El Granada? Melinda and her associates followed up with the planning department to confirm the details. Planning department says that a biological evaluation for the six parcels on the school district land is still being incorporated into the EIR, the Environmental Impact Report, and the board will hold a separate vote on these parcels this summer. Given that it was 4-1 and the one was from District 3.
Yeah, the one that represents those parcels.
And those other folks don't live here. I'm not feeling super optimistic about this. However, Melinda's a very optimistic person and she talked me off the ledge. Because she said citizens are planning to meet with the supervisors individually to share information about the newly identified historical overwintering site, seasonal wetlands, and the importance to the neighborhood of this parcel, like I said when we opened the segment.
Yeah, and then, you know, many of the other supervisors will note often that we are a spot that they come to, you know, get away from inner city stuff and, you know, not, you know, staycation kind of a thing. And it's like they need to take into account that, yeah, we're not in their district and stuff, but like we are the place that they come to get away and have moments of peace and quiet and, you know, become one with the ocean and whatever it is. And so if they're to vote to continue to force housing or developments is, I wish that the county, and we talked about this a little bit earlier off mic, but I wish that the county and the city would join in on the other coastal communities up and down California that are fighting against the forced numbers. So it's like, they're not saying that more affordable housing isn't needed, and they're not saying that they're not going to strive for it and aim for it, and, you know, responsible development is still very much important and a thing, but they are fighting against the fact that the state is saying you need to do 400 units. Like, where are we going to do 400 units in the city of Half Moon Bay? And whatever the units are, the county is being told for Midcoast and South Coast. And so, you know, that's what they're fighting against, is the arbitrariness of the numbers that are being shoved upon us. And so I really hope that people can get through to the people who are in decision-making positions that just because the state says so does not mean that it fits, and we very much need to protect the charm and character of our area for us, the residents, but also for the residents of the San Mateo County that come here for respite.
I would even say we have a responsibility to also protect the environment and the creatures, yes, that live in it.
Yes.
Okay, so Melinda and her associates also met with Cabrillo Unified School District, the owners of the property. They met with Dr. Miramontes. And at that meeting, they also had Mia Monroe from the Xerxes Society and Joseph Santoni, who's the chair of the science department at Half Moon Bay High School. And they met to discuss potential uses for this land that could help the Board of Supervisors see that, okay, yes, we want to rezone it for housing, but look, there's another proposal that would be equally beneficial to the community. So
is your car warranty up to date?
We'll see. Okay, this is Ruben and Crystalline. Who's on the phone this morning?
This is Don Novarina with Grad Night.
Oh, Don, hello. Hi. Yes, Grad Night. Let's hear a notice on that, Don.
We are, a week away? Less than a week away. And we are still looking for a few more volunteers. So we are hoping that some of your listeners will go to our website at hmbhsgradnight.com. And right at the top of the page, there's a link where they can sign up.
Listeners, it's a super fun night. My wife has signed up. She's going to be doing it. It's going to be, you will really love yourself for doing this. You will have a great time. And please, do something for the kids of this community. This is a wonderful thing that Dawn and her people have set up to keep our kids safe. It's super fun. My wife's super into it. She's doing it with a bunch of her friends. Get a few of your friends and sign up. Dawn, what are some of the things that you still need people to sign up for?
Well, we've got a number of shifts open from the 9:30 to midnight door monitors. We have some late nights, and those are the hardest to fill, actually, Ruben. The 1 a.m. to 4 a.m., everyone's tired, and if there are folks listening who are retired and maybe don't have to get up in the morning, we would love for you to come in and give us a few hours. We'll feed you. You'll have fun. It's just a great experience.
And it's, as somebody who did it last year, and I don't have kids, so I'm not around them all the time, it was like a wild blast from the past kind of a feeling the whole time, just like hearing teenagers talk about stuff and how they giggle in that very teenager-y kind of a way. And it just it's just very nostalgic and kind of like a fun teleport into your high school days.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a momentary fountain of youth of you feel younger. You're around these young kids who are excited and about to go out in the world. And you feel like, oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
For a moment in time.
For me, it's the same feeling as when you go to a mall and you see the kids running up and down the mall, and you remember when you used to be the screaming kid in the mall.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dawn, thank you for calling in and reminding our listeners and listeners. Okay, Dawn, where do they go again to sign up?
The website is HMBHS. GradNight.com. And the moment you hit there, you'll see right at the top the volunteer link.
And what date is Grad Night?
Grad Night is, by the way, it's at the IDS Hall in Half Moon Bay, and it is June 4th. That is Thursday of next week.
Right, after graduation. Graduation, I think, is at 6 o'clock that night.
That's the whole point. We want to keep these kids safe. They're moving on to the next chapter of their life. They're just excited. They've had a huge event happening, and we're going to give them a once-in-a-lifetime celebration that will keep them safe, and we'll send them home at 5 a.m. exhausted, but ready to move on.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this, Dawn. Thank you for what you do, and thanks for calling in and reminding our folks. People, go to the website, sign up. You will really thank yourself for doing it. You'll have a great time. Thank you, Dawn.
And thank you for your support, Ruben and Crystalline.
Of course. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Dawn.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yes, I'm so glad Dawn called because I had meant to remind folks about Grad Night. Okay. So Xerxes people. So here was one proposal to use the air for the Xerxes parcel. To use the area for educational and community space focused on monarch and wildlife habitat, supporting both student learning and wildlife habitat with the existing corridor of trees and wetlands. You could have the environmental sciences department at Half Moon Bay High does all kinds of field trips out to various spots, and this could be a working laboratory for them, which is, you know, right here on the coast side. You know, as he should. Dr. Miramontes raised concerns about site safety, including falling trees, but further discussion focused on how habitat enhancement can align with responsible tree maintenance and field management, as well as appropriate timing outside of nesting and maternity season. So these are solvable problems. Wow, 2 minutes, really? 2 minutes? Okay. Dr. Miramontes said he was open to reviewing a proposal for something in the near term. And so Melinda and her group are working with him on that. And I think that's important as, again, to provide an alternative to the Board of Supervisors. So back to AB 2254. It has passed out of the Assembly Committee on Appropriations and has twice now been fully read out to the Assembly. It will be read out once more for a full floor vote. No word from Tom Steyer on this critical local issue, by the way. I'm just saying, like, you know, like, haven't heard anything from him on this. Don't even know if he knows that El Granada exists. But Melinda, Xerxes, and others are asking supporters in California to contact their assembly members by letter, text message, or phone call. Contact your board of supervisors. Contact Dr. Miramontes. If people in positions of authority and decision making don't hear from you, they don't know that you feel strongly about this.
And send it to the other supervisors and just copy Ray, since Ray's the one that voted to keep it. You know, keep it rural. So it's the other four that need to hear from you.
And go out and buy one of those bumper stickers that says "Keep the coast side."
Yeah, there you go.
Right. Okay, so we'll get to about those building permits next week. We're going to have a member of the MCC here to talk about. They're going to be here to talk about encouraging people to run for the MCC.
Yeah.
MCC has had an issue lately over the past few years where they haven't even had enough people running to need an election, and they've been having people, what is the word?
Appointed.
Thank you. I was going to say assigned, but that didn't really sound right. Okay.
Oh, wouldn't that be an interesting government? You, over there, you are now.
You've been drafted into the government. Okay, thanks for listening. Again, I'm sorry for being so phlegmy on the show.
Yeah, you held it together very well.
I'm ready to go home and go to bed.
Woo!
All right. Have a great week, everybody. Try to avoid that traffic if you can. Think about the butterflies. Volunteer for grad night.
Woo.
Next week is going to be a three hanky week for the Truthmaker household. Okay, because we've got a graduating senior. Okay, thank you, Coastsiders, for listening. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.